Welcome to the weekly podcast from Gorebridge Parish Church. For more teaching or to find out more about life at Gorebridge Parish Church, please visit our website, gorepc.com.
So through our Advent season, we were looking at the theme of hope. Hope is something which can be in short supply in a world where bad things happen. Where sickness or disease or disaster overtakes us, addiction, relational breakdown. But hope is what Jesus intends to bring into the world. The conspiracy of God, Father, Son, and Holy Spirit to remake and rescue a world that is in need. And one of the most famous verses that deals with the issue of hope comes from 1 Corinthians 13, which will be recognizable not just to those of you who come to church or read the scriptures, but anyone who's been to a wedding. That after reading about the nature of love, Paul, in this dispute in an early church in ancient Greece in a place called Corinth, after trying to get people to be fair in how they distribute their food, to get them to engage in the gifts that God has given them, both the very practical ones and the more obviously supernatural ones, Paul wants to bring them back again to the source, to what it's all about, and he brings them back to the nature of love. And in 1 Corinthians 13, we read through that. Indeed, it might be an idea to do that just now. So if you reach for your pew Bibles and look up 1 Corinthians 13, let's read through this famous passage together. Paul writes this: "If I could speak all the languages of earth and of angels, but didn't love others, and only be a noisy gong or a clanging cymbal. If I had the gift of prophecy and I understood all of God's secret plans and possessed all knowledge, then if I had such faith that I could move mountains but didn't love others, I'd be nothing. If I gave up everything I have to the poor and even sacrificed my body, I could boast about it, but if I didn't love others, I would have gained nothing. Love is patient and kind. Love is not jealous or boastful or proud or rude. It does not demand its own way. It's not irritable, and it keeps no record of being wronged. It does not rejoice about injustice, but rejoices whenever the truth wins out. Love never gives up, never fails, never loses faith. It's always hopeful and endures through every circumstance. Prophecy and speaking in unknown languages and special knowledge will become useless. But love will last forever. Now our knowledge is partial and incomplete. And even the gift of prophecy reveals only part of the whole picture. But when the time of perfection comes, these partial things will become useless. When I was a child, I spoke and thought and reasoned as a child. But when I grew up, I put away childish things. Now we see things imperfectly, like puzzling reflections in a mirror. But then we will see everything with perfect clarity. All I know now is partial and incomplete, but then I will know everything completely, just as God knows me completely. These three things will last forever: faith, hope, and love. And the greatest of these is love." The greatest of these is love. Love never ends. Love is eternal. Love never fails. We can translate it in various ways. But the thing about love, in this description of love is eternal. I have the privilege of officiating at weddings. It's a great joy. Well, they tend to happen at the weekend, so they can be a juggle to organize. But the thing with a wedding is you're standing on the cusp of a couple making a commitment to each other that's going to last a lifetime, or prayerfully it will. And where that wins out, everybody benefits. When a marriage stays strong, and a husband and wife love one another through the years, then their family, their community, everybody around about them benefits. But we know, and in Britain now, it will be about half of marriages, and indeed many of you, have been through the fires of divorce. Painful and wounding as that is. And then, when I find out that a couple I've taken a wedding for, it's ended in dissolution, a shadow passes over me. Because that hope that started out bright with the best of intentions, for whatever reason, has been derailed. And just in passing, the church has in the past treated divorce like an unforgivable sin. It is not. It's just another bit of human brokenness that Jesus can salvage. And I know many people who have been through the fires of divorce. But remember, Jesus sets us free from the after effects of that. And if he sets you free, you're really free. Well, why do I bring that up? Well, I think about human friendship. And there are people that I've known for many, many years where friendship has lasted. But there's other people where there's been a breakdown of relationship. And I'm sure every one of you can relate to that. If I talk about friendships that haven't lasted the course, for whatever reason, be it drift or difficulty or a point of disagreement, you'll know the pain of that. And as I'm speaking to you, perhaps their faces or names are passing through your mind. The reason I bring this up is that human love can be temporary. As we gather together thoughts at the end of somebody's life and I start writing a eulogy, sometimes the most painful things come to light. Mothers who didn't love their children. Breakdown of marriage or of hope. It touches so many of us that we build up inner narratives as to the nature of love. And indeed, our culture perhaps has reduced love to a point where it's about me and what can I get out of a relationship and what do I need for my self-fulfillment, whereas the love that Jesus is, that Paul's talking about here is Jesus' love, and that love's very, very different. It is a love that gives and gives and gives without thought for self. Those are the love relationships we're intended to have for one another, within marriage and within friendship. And if human love can seem temporary, when Paul writes that love is eternal, we've got to ask why. I mean, if you imagine that we lived as long as Methuselah, yeah, come on, you Bible class people, how long did Methuselah live? 977 years, was it? Purportedly. Some of you are going, rubbish. Okay, yeah, well. It's a lot of birthdays. Imagine the number of socks that man had. It is what happens to us men at a certain point, isn't it? What will I get, Dad? Ooh, socks. Sometimes socks that are only wearable in secret. You imagine if we lived as long as Methuselah. Got to think he might have been disappointed not to make his 1,000. How long could a relationship sustain? How long? Or would he wear out one wife and maybe look for another? Or fall out with his kids? Or not get on with his daughter-in-law? Or whatever it may be. And we're all smiling because we all know. Those of you who consume soap operas, there's a special prayer for you. But, assuming that you enjoy it, where would a soap opera plotline be without the breakdown of relationship? Or indeed movies or anything of that nature? Why could love be eternal? I was telling a story the other day, I think it was 2 weeks ago, about being kicked in the head while someone was stage diving at a concert. I was not pleased about this. You don't need to know any more than that. Anyone here being kicked in the head while someone's been crowd surfing? Oh, you don't go to enough gigs. You must have been. Must have been. What's your worst gig experience? Download? Bottle of suspicious liquid. Feeder lasted 10 minutes. There we go. Thank you. You can tap up Ross for gig stories. Obviously, I'm sure you got to have some, Steph. So you've got to have some good gig stories. Funny things happen at gigs. Sometimes slightly funny things. There was Michael Sweet, who sings in a band called Striper, very influential in bringing me to faith. He says his worst ever gig story was the crowd were pointing at something on the front of a stage, and he saw it, and he didn't think twice about it, and just kicked it off, And after the gig, found out it was somebody's glass eye that had fallen out. All right? And lest I be an apologist for Ozzy Osbourne, okay, you may know Ozzy's The Chicken Story. Yeah, okay. Ozzy Osbourne did not bite the head off a chicken on stage. He's done many stupid things in his life, but he didn't do that. The thing is he would say, come from Birmingham, I didn't know the chickens don't fly. So when he threw that chicken off into the audience, he was saying, fly, chicken, fly. And of course, it didn't, with inevitable results. Bad gig stories. So I'd been kicked in the head and one eye was swelling up, thanks to the Doc Martin boot, a 12-hole lace, I think it was. And we got to the band that I was really looking forward to. It's a band called King's X. And they were touring for this album called Faith, Hope, and Love. I did have a t-shirt that I wore till it was gray. Anyone wore a black t-shirt till it was gray? Oh, absolutely. You got to do it, man. I don't know if Diane's managed to throw this out yet. I might have managed to filch it away somewhere. But Faith, Hope, and Love by King's X was one of my favorite albums of the 80s and remains so today. And there's a song on that album which is called We Were Born to Be Loved. 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 Depends how you put the emphasis. And that encapsulates for me, and in fact, it's a song about Jesus, but that encapsulates for me the seed that God has put in our hearts for relationships to last, to endure, for marriages to sustain, and not just to sustain to the point of death. It's interesting, in the old marriage service, it used to be till death do us part, but now what we say is for as long as we live, which has interesting theological implications if you believe that life lasts after the grave. Jesus was once pinned with a question about who a woman might be married to and deals with that by saying there won't be any marriage hereafter, which makes those of us who enjoy marriage, you know, panic, and those of us who've had trouble with marriage probably heave a huge sigh of relief. I think what he's saying is that we'll get it sorted. Because love lasts forever. Love lasts forever. Not every human love, but a very particular love. Jesus had a best friend. Do you know this? He had a best buddy in all the world. His best buddy in all the world was called John. Okay. John was probably the youngest of the disciples. Probably no more than a teenager when he took up following Jesus. We know this because he's the only one of the disciples who died of natural causes. And he took Jesus' mom, Mary, to Ephesus and lived out the rest of his days there when he hadn't been arrested and exiled. But John, writing to the churches that he was responsible for, writes in his letter about all sorts of things, but the thing he keeps returning to is love. And he says this in 1 John 4:16, God is love. Let's just take a moment to think about that. I think for many of us, we imagine that God is God, right? And then we fill that word God with all sorts of bits and pieces. Almighty, creator, will beat you at a poker game. Well, he would, because he's God. And he knows what cards you're holding. And he can see when you're bluffing. It's true. All sorts of other things come in from outside, too. Attributes of God that are different from what Jesus showed us. And although the scriptures would tell you that it's a fearful thing to fall into the hands of the Almighty God, it's not if you know and love Him. And when John was looking to communicate with these young churches, he's thinking about how to sum up Jesus' teaching in a few pithy words. He says, God is love. And those who live in love live in God and God lives in them. In other words, where love is, where genuine, fulsome, wholesome, life-affirming, creative love is present, God's there in the midst. He's there. Because not only is God the author of love, He is the originator of all love. A bit like if you pull that money you've worked so hard to earn out of your wallet, you will see that it really is just a promise note from a bank somewhere. You really don't have anything of value at all, other than a promise that will be honored. And we pass these to one another in the hope that it'll all go well. And for those of you who've ever lived in the developing world, you will know there are times where it goes very badly indeed. And you have to spend your money quickly because next week it might not buy what it bought this week. All love originates with God. Let me just do a wee aside for a moment. The universe is marvelous, isn't it? The universe is marvelous. But until there were creatures who could enjoy the beauty of a sunset or the wonder of a galaxy, it held no wonder really at all. You think about that? Other than the fact it was made by someone who is the source of beauty and of wonder. You fancy we joke? Okay, we joke. And my apologies. This one isn't very nice to atheists. I love atheists. I really do. They're my job security in many ways. Now, but an atheist meets God and says, oh, I'm a bit surprised to see you. I didn't think you existed. And God said, well, I do. I am. And the atheist says, thing is, I'm not sure we really need you. We can make things. We've got all the raw materials we need to make stuff. And we could create a universe without you. And God says, okay. You fancy a build-off? Let's have a build-off, says the atheist. So they're getting ready to start. And the atheist says, what should we start with? And God says, well, in the past I've kind of thought dust isn't a bad place to start. So the atheist says, great. And they're just about to get going. God says, hey, hang on a minute. Get your own dust. So the reason I'm saying that is we often think about, is there a God or isn't there a God, assuming everything stays in place. Family relationships, the love that's been passed down to us by our grandparents, the care of the community, the wonderful NHS who are there to field the catches when we fall out of trees or do dodgy tackles at five-a-side, or suddenly find out that we have some illness that we weren't expecting. All of those good things that surround us didn't happen in a vacuum unless there is no God. But as you understand God and understand that He is love, this world starts to make sense. For He didn't just make stuff, He made us. And He didn't just make us, He made the things that we get to experience. John takes all of that he experienced with Jesus and boils it down. 3 years of experience, seeing all sorts of things. Yesterday I was meeting with a group of men for breakfast. I recommend it, especially when someone else is cooking. Thank you, Alistair. And we were looking at the first chapter of Mark, just one of the 16 chapters of Mark's gospel. And this is what John saw happening around about him. Jesus takes up his mission. He identifies with us to serve at his baptism. He's driven out into the desert to kick the enemy to overcome the enemy. He arrives back, starts ministering. He heals, he delivers, he teaches, he expresses God's love, he cares. He sorts out an issue with Peter's mother-in-law, who then cooks a cracking meal. And he does this all for the people who are there. And he does it for us. Just think for a moment how wonderful that Jesus truly is. Those of you who are doing Alpha got to discover, because I know for some of you, you think, well, maybe the Gospels are fairy stories. Maybe they are. But if they are fairy stories, they were written in the living memory of the people who could have disproved the events. The accuracy and authenticity of the New Testament is extraordinary. The earliest fragment we have of the New Testament is about 140 AD, and there's a bit of mark that was found in Egyptian face masks and a bit of paper mache somewhere that may even predate that. In other words, we have fragments of the Gospels that date to less than 100 years after the events, which for an ancient document is astonishing. And we have full copies of the New Testament that date to about 350 and onwards. And where we might have a few copies of an ancient Greek or Roman writing, and our oldest copy might be 1,000 years after it was perhaps written, Livy, Herodotus, these guys, we have thousands and thousands of Greek manuscripts and Latin manuscripts and Syriac manuscripts that date way, way earlier. And the accounts of Jesus' life reveal to us a God who finds expression in human form, God among us, Emmanuel, as we've been celebrating. And he loves and heals and forgives and serves and says, if you come to me, you'll find rest. If you live with me, you'll find life in all its fullness. If you follow me, I'll get you where you're fishing for people. If you trust in me, my Father will make you one of his children by adoption as much as I am one by right. And Jesus says, you think about this. Just think about this. Jesus has been pinned to a piece of rough woodwork. The shame of it, to nail a carpenter to some woodwork. And there beside him are two other criminals, and one of them just gives him dog's abuse, and the other one says, shut up. He hasn't done anything wrong. All that thief says is, just remember me. Remember me when you become king. And Jesus says, you're going to be with me in paradise today. Life is hard, is it not? Really, really hard. No matter how much wealth and achievement and satisfaction we surround our lives with, there are things that just go wrong. And we face things in our communities, in our families, in our own personal life that rip our heart out. Friends, this world is wonderful, but it's broken. And it's Jesus' love, the love that is eternal, that gathers up all of the brokenness and the difficulty, all the disease and the shame, all of the breakdown and heartache, all of the war and suffering, gathers it all up to himself, puts it to the cross, sticks it in the grave, and just at the point where the enemy thought he had overcome the Son of God, bursts out of the grave with a life that has none of that stuff left, and then says, hey, you guys, come follow me. That love changed my life. My dad was an engineer. I wanted to be an engineer. Now, my dad was an engineer and a part-time preacher. I kind of reversed it. I became a preacher and I fixed things in my spare time. I was all set up. I can remember it. Nice car, nice house, nice career, lovely wife. Tick. Made that one. Although, frankly, had I been going that other path, I don't think she'd have looked at me. All those things set out as a teenager. This is what I think life's all about. Go get them. Again, those of you who are watching the Alpha video this week would have seen Jim Carrey, you know, the Canadian comedian, who frankly gets on my nerves every now and then. But Jim Carrey had said that his wish for everybody is that they'd achieve their ambitions and they gain great wealth so they could find out that's not what life's about. It's not. It's not. You get to the top of that mountain. You get to the summit of that achievement. It never, ever satisfies the way we think it will. Because we were born to be loved. And that made it through into my life because I saw other people's lives and they were different. There was something qualitatively different about their lives. There was a deep-rooted kindness. And as Nikki Gumbel said on the video, a slightly creepy smile. There was something inside them that drove them in a different way. They were marching to a different tune. Their life was based on a different principle. There was a kindness, a love about them that I hadn't seen before. And these people had their issues. But somehow when they came up against them, it dealt differently. And I saw that and I thought, good grief. Forgive me for being candid. But I had a teenager's attitude to sexual intimacy, which is kind of like, where's the sweetie jar? I'd like a pocketful. Yeah? Some grown-ups live like that. And then I found this strange, bearded, middle-aged, balding man in a checked shirt who said that actually, if we let that sex thing belong in marriage, then it's not about what I get, it's about what I give. I'd never met anyone who believed that. And the fact that he was meant to be that vulnerable, and the fact, I mean, first of all, I was encouraged that sex seemed to be happening in the life of someone who was kind of ordinary looking. That was good. But that change of attitude I saw in him, that was one of the key things that caused me to consider life with Jesus Christ. Because I thought, how can he think like that? If he's saying the truth, if he's speaking what's true, he's not thinking about himself. He's actually thinking about the other person. He's thinking about his wife. Wow. What if everybody loved like that? I'm not just talking about marriage. I'm talking about friendship. I'm talking about your relationship with your parents or your grandchildren. I'm talking about neighbor relationships. What if we were just to give, knowing that we'd receive back from somewhere? And then, of course, I realized that the place these people were getting their love resources topped up from was Jesus himself. They seemed to have a relationship with a guy that I thought was dead. And that realization meant that I opened the door to trusting him, and it completely changed my life. Completely. Now, those of you who are close enough to me know that I am not a perfect person. Far from it. But my goodness me, who would I be without Jesus? And this I know. This I know. You know my appendix exploded back in September. Some of you won't know that. I'm going to be milking that for weeks. It's all right. But here's the thing. Just after my appendix went off like a hand grenade, my dad died 2 days later. And I said to, someone was asking me, he said, were you seriously ill? You know, that can be really serious, a burst appendix. And I said, yeah, septicemia, peritonitis. You can end up in trouble. I said, I probably had a week or two. And Diane said, you had a day or two. And then I realized that if I hadn't received the care that I got there, I would have perhaps died on the same day as my father. There's a sharpener. Imagine my poor mom. And I thought about that. And I thought, do you know what? My dad had run his race. He'd lived his life, and he knew where he was going. And he was so disabled by strokes and heart attacks and things of that nature that much of his, if there wasn't modern medical science, he wouldn't have been there. And he knew where he was going, and my mum knew where he was going, and he died, and it's sore, and it's still sore sometimes, and it still catches me. Still catches me. I'll pick up a tool that was his, or I picked up a pot of grease that was his the other day to grease up something, and I felt that. But I know where he is. So where's this leading? If God is love, as John says, Jesus is love. Jesus is love. We see love exemplified in Jesus. Fascinating fact, not a married man. A bachelor. We see the love of God perfectly revealed to us in the life of a bachelor. We're not talking Joey and Chandler and the lazy boys watching telly. We're talking about a different kind of bachelor life, aren't we? We're talking about a life that's free to love and give and teach, mainline God's love on behalf of others. See it pour in, an understanding of love like we've never seen before. Nobody has had an influence on the world like Jesus has. And here's the thing. When Ross and Fee named their daughters, they named Eden, Eden. And we know what that's about. That's about creation. How it was intended to be at the start. And then they're thinking, oh my goodness me, we understand this problem. We've given our child a meaningful Hebrew name. What are we going to give baby to? What are we going to give baby to? And they've called her Ariel, and as Ross says, there's a point in the scriptures in the book of Isaiah that Jerusalem is called Ariel. And Jerusalem doesn't just speak of the place that's torn apart by division and difficulty at the moment. Jerusalem speaks about the new Jerusalem, which is where we get a postbox and address if we put our trust in Jesus. And we live in between those two moments. We live after the initial creation that was good but is now broken because of bad choices. But we also have the choice to get there. Here's the thing. Where are we today? Where are we? Do we have an assurance in our lives that when we come to the end of our day, that we will meet the author of love who will embrace us into his keeping, that we'll be healed of our brokenness and sickness and sorrow and pain and gathered in. Do we know that? My Father is awaiting the recreation in the presence of Jesus. As sure as death and taxes, he is there. My grandfather also similarly, and my great-grandfather, and my grandmother. My mum's not there yet. And as she'll be listening to this, I better say hello. Hi, mum. But she knows. She knows. What about you? Let me briefly explain the mechanics. Jesus loved us so much that he gave up his life, that there will be a means by which the difficulty and brokenness and evil in our lives can be dealt with. The stuff that's happened to us, the stuff we've perpetrated on others that made us put our hand up earlier on. But also as a way into that new creation. And actually, as we trust him, the reason those Christians have a creepy smile on their face is that they're the gateway, and so are others who do good, by the way, whether they know it or not, of the goodness of God's love pouring into the world. And as it pours into the world and pours into the world, do you know that without Jesus, there would be no modern hospitals, there would be no hospices, there would be no orphanages, the ancient world left unwanted children on the rubbish heap to die, and Jesus' followers in the early centuries would go out to the rubbish tips and pick up these children who were often girls who weren't wanted or disabled children, and they would bring them up as their own. That's where orphanages began. Jesus is the reason that we care about people in those situations. We so take it for granted, we don't even know that we live in his grace. And those of us who've grown up in Britain, my goodness me, we're surrounded by stuff that just wouldn't be here if it wasn't for Jesus. And he says to us, will you trust me? These things remain. Faith, hope, and love. The greatest of these is love. Because Jesus is love. And now, where are you in relation to Jesus' love? And I'm not just talking if you've never been in church before and some well-motivated person's dragged you in, especially Ross and Fee. They can be persuasive. I'm talking to you if you've been a kind of, you said yes to the Christian stuff for years, but you still don't know. I want everybody to leave here today knowing this, that if this day is my last, then as soon as my life ends, I'm going to meet Jesus. If this day is my last, as soon as life here ends, my life doesn't end. I step into the presence of Jesus. Do you know that? I pray so. Let's pray.